Wing TV, with Victor Thorne and Lisa Giuliani. The revolution is being televised.
Hello, it's Thursday, June 16th, and you're watching Wing TV. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing TV. As we've been saying all week, we have a very special guest today, Mr. Chris Emery, who's a member of the Oklahoma City Bombing Investigation Committee, and really one of the penultimate sources in keeping the whole Oklahoma City bombing investigation alive.
He's someone we deeply admire.
Right. As Lisa says about him, he is an impeachable source.
Unimpeachable.
I'm sorry.
Get it right.
And when we traveled to Oklahoma City, we saw pretty much how this guy puts in 20-hour days every single day. And I guess instrumental in just bringing this whole rally together and also the speakers forum. And we're just very, very honored to have Chris Emery on Wing TV today. So how you doing, Chris?
Hi, Lisa and Victor. Thank you for having me back. And
hi.
I do want to spread the credit to the other folks that participated, including you two. So thank you for the accolade.
Right. Now, it's been less than 2 months since we've been to Oklahoma City when we visited out there for the 10th anniversary. And I can't believe how much stuff is going on since we came back from there. Mm-hmm. So let's jump right into it here. We got a lot of questions for you. And recently, Terry Nichols appeared before a Denver grand jury. I guess this was last week. But he refused to testify. Now, his ex-wife came out and said that Nichols told them that this wasn't the right forum in which to testify. And his sister said that he refused to testify, and he gave an explanation why. So my first question, Chris, is, do you have any reason why he didn't testify, and what's the behind-the-scenes story?
Well, you can actually revert back to what happened with the Oklahoma City grand jury here in 1995, and of course we all know what happened to Hoppy Heidelberg, so rightfully so, Mr. Nichols chose not to give them the information because it would have been pigeonholed and quashed by the judge overseeing the grand jury.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, and I found out through a very credible source connected with the family that the FBI is screening everything that Mr. Nichols is saying, and they will not let him testify in front of a congressional hearing unless he has their approval.
Huh.
So that is absolutely upside down. There's no objectivity and no forthright legal conduct there at all.
Right.
So I can certainly understand why Terry wants to keep quiet.
Yeah, I do too.
Terry Nichols' sister, Susie McDonald, doesn't feel that her brother is safe at the federal supermax prison in Florence, Colorado. She feels like he's being threatened. He's marked for death. She fears for his life. So tell me, Chris, what are the chances that he might get knocked off in prison if he does testify and tell all?
Well, another aspect to that, I think his chances are very good, unfortunately, and I hate to say that because I have a lot of respect for the Nichols family, and it's unfortunate to see the situation he's in. But I found out that when he came back from the Denver grand jury, and he had a FBI agent walk him back to his cell. That's the worst thing that you could do to an inmate, because it clearly shows to the other inmates that even though he didn't say anything, he's an alleged snitch.
Yep.
And
yeah,
there is no point of return there. There is no turning back.
Yeah, it's weird. Cause when I spoke to you last night, I was reading an article about him, and I wrote in the margin of it, you know, this guy's a marked man. He's knocked off. And 10 minutes later when I spoke to you, you said the same thing. And, you know, he needs to get his information out as soon as possible because there's a cloud hanging over him. Now, let's move on to a guy named Kenneth Tredidu. Now, he was mistaken for being one of Timothy McVeigh's accomplices, and by good sources, probably mistaken to be Richard Lee Guthrie. Now, while he was in prison, they said that he committed suicide, another one of these suicides. But when they looked closer to the body, they saw that he was tortured, beaten, his throat was slashed, he was garroted, there were bruises on him, burns, cuts from his toes to the top of his head. The coroner wasn't allowed into his cell, and the cell had been cleaned before there was any investigation. So tell us about this body count, people involved with Oklahoma City, like Terry Yakey, and do you feel that federal agents killed Kenneth Tredidu in this federal prison in Oklahoma City?
There's no doubt about it. Whether there are employees of the federal government or not, we're not quite sure, because like you said, the entire crime scene was wiped clean.
Right.
And our state medical examiner, former state medical examiner, Fred Jordan, admitted as much that there was corruption on this, and he's since come out since he's retired and clearly stated that Mr. Tredidu was killed. It's an unsolved homicide case.
Mm-hmm.
Kenneth Tredidu's brother brother Jesse is an attorney. Okay, now we also know federal judge Dale Kimball caught the FBI in a bold-faced lie after FBI documents were leaked to Jesse Trenadue. Now this judge ordered the FBI to produce all the documents, but now KSL-TV has reported Kimball's now pulling back on that order. So where does this leave us now, Chris, and have there been any recent developments?
The last I heard that those records were supposed to be turned over yesterday. I have not put a call into Attorney Trenadue's office out of respect for his lawsuit. Hopefully, he will be getting something, but unfortunately, it looks like it's going to be the same old conundrum and same old whirlpool and vortex that we're sucked into with the Oklahoma City case. Mm. The FBI will backpedal, they will obfuscate, they'll make up reasons and lies, plenty of them, to pretty much stonewall what Mr. Trenadue is doing. He just simply wants to get the truth out on his brother's case.
Mm. Right. Now, Chris, before we move on, I'm holding up a copy here, a final report, which everybody, if they have any interest whatsoever in this case, this is the definitive source on this information. Why don't you tell everyone how they can find the OKBIC website?
The website is located at www.okcbombing.org.
Okay.
And I believe there's a link on your website with it also.
Right.
Right.
This book, from what I've heard from other attorneys, as well as some of the ballistics experts that are listed in the book, cited the book, is the best and most definitive coverage of the entire case.
It is.
It puts together what Jana Davis had worked on, what Stephen Jones had revealed, and it's all comprehensive, 52 pages of photos. There's enough information in there, without a doubt, enough indictable information to put people in jail if it is brought in front of the correct federal grand jury and federal judge that is willing to follow through on the case.
And this book's as big as an L.A. phone book.
Yes,
and
it is.
If this was laid in any congressman's lap in a testimony or a hearing, as Chris said, it would definitely be case closed. Now, on January 4th of 1996, there was a memo from FBI Director Louis Freeh. And there were revelations in this memo that Morris Dees and the Southern Poverty Law Center actually helped the FBI run a sting operation in Elohim City. My question is was Morris Dees, do you think he's ever going to be subpoenaed and forced to talk about his involvement in the Oklahoma City bombing? And also, Chris, if this is true, why wouldn't Morris Dees, who's always out looking for supposedly neo-Nazis and racists, why wouldn't he look into further the Elohim City connection where there were known racists and neo-Nazis and so forth, instead of just saying, well, it was McVeigh and Nichols and that's it, case closed?
It was a setup, and Mr. Dees is proof positive of that. And if he takes exception to that comment, then he can come back here to Oklahoma City and sit down with about 40 of us and explain why he and his compatriots were supporting Timothy McVeigh.
Yeah.
It's coming full circle back at him. We're catching him in the lie. And for a lot of your viewers that aren't aware of, for the ADL to label anyone here in Oklahoma City trying to get the truth out of extremists is completely, it's a patently bogus statement.
Yeah, let me get to that.
We're
Chris.
Catching him on his lie.
I'm going to get to that. In Victor's chapbook, The OKC Bombing, Elohim City Connection, he proves that Elohim City and the Midwest Bank Robbery Gang were infiltrated by the FBI, the ATF, the ADL, and possibly others. So, now, tell us, what was your reaction when we all discovered recently that the OKC Rally and Speakers Forum is listed, it's targeted, on the ADL's website hate list?
I was very surprised. Not so much upset, just more surprised. And then immediately when you see something that outlandish and completely absurd, you say, okay, consider the source. What are the motives? And just like I mentioned, it comes back full circle. Mr. Dees and his associates were involved to some degree in setting this operation up. We don't know how far of a degree is, but we know that they were complicit. And once we get the truth out, it's going to come right back at them. They choose to discredit the very group that's bringing the truth out. That's their prerogative, but it's our prerogative to show that they're lying. And what they're claiming is completely absurd.
Yeah. Now, right around the time of the 10th anniversary of the Oklahoma City bombing, Terry Nichols came out and he revealed the location of some explosives that he said were stored beneath his former residence in Kansas. These explosives were subsequently found. He also fingered an admitted FBI informant named Roger Moore, who was informing the two people in the FBI named Agents Ross and Agents Hayes. What is the status now of Roger Moore, and where does this fit into the whole picture?
Roger Moore is, from what I understand, is living in Florida, and he goes way back. A lot of you folks are back in history to the Iran-Contra affair.
Okay.
A good associate of ours has done a lot of research on him in the last 4 or 5 weeks, and we found out this guy is—he's got an incredibly dirty background. He's a very dangerous man, and for anybody to think that he was living hand to mouth, just selling guns at various gun shows, is incredibly naive. He was set up with this case with McVeigh, and we know he was an informant with the FBI and had some dealings with the ATF. He's not to be trusted. He should be brought before a grand jury and questioned. But he's just been pulled away from the case. The FBI said he has nothing to do with it. Well, there's another bald-faced lie.
Yeah. When you say Iran-Contra, do you mean with Oliver North and that whole debacle?
Yes. Okay. That's why he's extremely dangerous. None of these men are to be trusted.
Right. Dana Rohrabacher has brought up the possibility of a new congressional investigation into the OKC bombing, and he wants the government to release dozens of confiscated surveillance tapes. Thus far, the government's refused all FOIA requests, even though the trials are over and the case is essentially closed officially. So, what's the status with Rohrabacher, and do you think that we'll ever get to see any of these tapes?
The status from Rohrabacher, from what I understand, the gentleman on the committee had called his office within the last 7 days, no response back. He's being very tight-lipped on this. I know through credible sources that he does want to talk to Mr. Nichols.
Mm-hmm.
He has been denied access to the maximum security prison. We're not quite sure why, other than the fact that the FBI is trying to cover their tail 12 ways. And so he's trying, but I think there's a lot of political backlash and a lot of influence for him to back off on at this point.
Well, who determines, Chris, who has access to Nichols and who doesn't?
I mean,
somewhere up the food chain, somebody has to say, and this isn't just like some guy off the street. This is a United States congressman.
The warden actually has the final say-so, and, of course, whoever he reports to. He's under a lot of pressure to really just keep this thing clamped down.
Oh, I can imagine. Now, throughout the years, as more and more information comes out, of course, we have a cover-up goon squad, not only on a national level, but also on a local level out there in Oklahoma City. Tell us about the roles that are being played in the cover-up by, first of all, Senator Ernest Istook, secondly, former Governor Frank Keating, and third, the county DA's Bob Macy, and also Wes Lane.
All of those gentlemen are laid out perfectly in the final report. I don't think I have to develop any further, but just to give you a quick review, Ernest Istook did have prior knowledge of this case. There's absolutely no doubt in our mind. Why he chose to just bald-faced lie to the general public, that's something that he's going to have to live with.
Right.
We have proof showing otherwise. Frank Keating knew what had happened. In fact, Frank was known for putting his foot in his mouth on several different occasions, both during and after his administration. And he came out within an hour of the bombing on Channel 4, and I just viewed that footage again, stating clearly that this was an act of professional group of individuals using a very sophisticated devices. So for him to say one thing an hour after the bombing and completely turn 180 and deny it afterwards shows that he's complicit in the cover-up. Bob Macy has since retired, and one other individual, Wes Lane, was also complicit, and I have no problem using that word, complicit in basically quashing a lot of relevant evidence showing others were involved in this case in the Nichols State trial in McAllister last year. Him and his prosecution team. It was extremely corrupt.
So we can tell now who the ones are that are squashing this information, right?
Oh, absolutely. You can just go right down the list. The names haven't changed. One other individual that you haven't mentioned is our Attorney General, Drew Edmondson.
Okay.
He was very instrumental in steering the direction of the investigation with the federal government as well as the state trial. It's astounding that he's even still in office collecting a paycheck from the people of Oklahoma.
Yeah, we've got a lot of politicians like that. One of the key figures in this whole OKC case is a guy named Andreas Drossmeier, and he's now reported to be residing in Germany, and he was allowed to leave the United States without ever being questioned by anyone. So tell me, do you know if anyone has tried to locate or question him lately?
Not recently. I have no recollection, but I saw a video that was put out by the BBC about 4 years ago. They did locate him at his apartment in Berlin, and they did talk to him, and he just outright lied about his involvement with the case, saying that he had very little to do with it. We know otherwise.
Right.
We have the documentation to prove it.
Yeah. Now, Chris, one of the highlights when we visited Oklahoma City was the speakers forum, which occurred the day after the anniversary rally. And it was great to see all the speakers there, Hoppy Heidelberg, General Parton, and also a guy named Craig Roberts. And he went through his involvement in this case, his investigation. And finally, when it was nearly over, I raised my hand and I asked him. I said, somewhere along the line, somewhere at a point and date and time, somebody had to have said, we're going to hit the Alfred P. Murrah building in Oklahoma City. I said also that if you go back to Harry Truman, he says the buck stops here. So I said, Mr. Roberts, who ultimately was the person that you think the buck stops with here? And he said, who had the most to lose in regard to the contents of that building? And he said, Bill Clinton. Do you think this went all the way to the White House?
Absolutely. There's no doubt in our mind. In fact, we had the second in command of the ATF, set to retire when the case came down, and he stated as much. He said, yes, top decision makers. We know that Jamie Gorelick was involved in completely derailing this case.
Mm-hmm.
She was number three in the Reno Justice Department, so common sense would say that they get their orders from the White House. They don't make orders on their own. They don't make the decisions on their own.
Yeah, and conveniently, Jamie Gorelick then was on the 9/11 whitewash committee, correct?
Absolutely, and that sheds absolutely no credibility on their committee at all. It's their report is complete hogwash anyway.
Right. Yeah. At the 10th anniversary speakers forum, Oklahoma City survivor Jane Graham said she saw two white men that appeared to be suspicious. They seemed to maybe be placing explosives in the parking garage, although I guess there's not any proof of that. In our opinion, the key thing about both 9/11 and OKC is bombs in the building, and we tried to really hammer that home, and we have been ever since. So why do you think people are so resistant still to this unmistakable fact, especially after General Parton's reports, after the news footage of bomb squads removing unexploded bombs from the Murrah building?
I think it goes back to what you folks have coined, and Hoppy Heidelberg, that is the cognitive dissonance. Mm-hmm. These people don't want to believe that something completely different occurred than what they were told. And if we just go back to the pure science and exactly what you said, you have to look at the condition of the building after the explosions. It was an asymmetrical blast pattern, just like you said with the towers, a controlled demolition. And all you do is you do the reverse detective work on this thing. You literally put the building back together the way it fell apart.
Uh-huh.
It shows that there was interior ordnance, no doubt about it.
Very interesting. Now, Chris, as we can tell from this interview, plus all the different articles and so forth, this case is still buzzing. 10 years later,
Big time. It's
still very, very relevant, not only to our lives, but there's a good chance that actually we could crack the case and the guilty parties could actually be nabbed. Now, the biggest disappointment is there's big portions of alternative radio and some alternative media sources that have completely ignored this case, that have completely dropped the ball. They did no publicity for the 10th anniversary. What do you think about them? Because we're very, very disappointed in how they're neglecting this case. I mean, even more so than the mainstream media.
They're ignoring it.
Yeah.
The alternative media, as you folks have eloquently pointed out in the last 5 weeks, doing a great job, looks like they've pretty much interfaced with the mainstream media. There is a lot of information that needs to be continually exposed on this case. Honestly, I don't know why. Just because it's a 10-year-old case doesn't mean it's not relevant.
That's right.
168 people murdered here. You had the top decision makers of the Justice Department choose to completely cover it up. And it's very sad. It's a sad state of affairs. That's why we have our core group, including you guys, helping us to make sure that we do not forget what happened here.
I mean, and this was the precedence before 9/11. This was the largest terrorist attack on American soil, correct?
That's correct. Aside from the Pearl Harbor,
right.
It was a wartime attack.
Right, inside the continental U.S.
At the OKC rally, an Oklahoma City policeman asked me if the name Terrence Yakey meant anything to me. And I remember I talked about this in my speech. And I told him, yes, sir, he was murdered. And I got the distinct impression that the cops that were around us knew that he was murdered, that they all know. And my question to you is, why don't they unite and confront the public with the truth? I mean, they can't all get killed. I know lives are in the balance, but why don't they come forward?
That's a question that Craig asked in parallel to the Tulsa Police Department. He said if it happened in Tulsa, they'd be down at the Union House in no time demanding answers from the police. gather, evidently the Oklahoma City Police Department had dirt held against them from the higher-ups. I'm not quite sure how that all came together, but they live in fear. And they saw that one of their own, 7-year veteran of the police department, was snuffed out, and I, with all due respect to the late Sergeant Yakey, that's exactly what happened.
Right.
They said, well, if you do it to him, they can do it to the others. And I think it's fear.
Yeah. Now, Chris, before we head out today, one more time, give everyone the website address that they can go to.
www.okcbombing.org.
Yeah. And I know there's a ton of information there. This is one of the vital sources that everyone has to take a look at. And Chris, before we leave, tell us about the film that you're currently making. I know you're working on this, and while we were out there, we saw you in action. This hopefully will be the definitive movie on, or the definitive documentary on the OKC bombing.
Yeah.
How's progress coming along?
We're making measured progress. We're almost done shooting the actual footage. Now it's just a matter of editing and doing the post-production.
Uh-huh.
And we have some final interviews to get done. And I do want to interject that you guys have been extremely helpful, and we're proud to have you there. We are going to be including footage with your interviews on it.
Wow, thank you.
Oh,
and,
thanks, Chris.
So we have to keep it under wraps. We don't want the authorities to know where we are and how it's coming along, but I can tell you that we're doing very well.
Chris, we just want you to know you're one of our heroes.
Yeah.
I mean,
you've just been you've been terrific today. And without your hard work and all those involved in the OKBIC, this case would have been, I think, swept under the rug if it weren't for these just dedicated people like you. So everybody out there in America, you know, drop Chris Emery a line. Let him know how much we appreciate it, because we certainly do.
If you can support their work and help them get farther along in their investigation and exposing this truth, please, please do so.
Right.
They need all the help they can get, and they're doing a fantastic job. They have a lot of courage.
Yeah. Well, Chris.
You guys are too. Thank you.
Well, keep up the great work. Tell everyone out there we said hello, and we'll talk to you soon, okay?
Thank you again, folks. God bless.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
All right, folks. Now, tomorrow we're going to be back with Michael Collins Piper. We're going to talk about this fantastic book, The New Jerusalem. And, you know, we can't give him enough credit. We really can't.
Chris Emery.
Right.
That guy never stops.
Yeah. It's someone that we look up to very, very immensely.
Yeah.
And, folks, we just hope you appreciate what he's doing. So we'll be back tomorrow on Wing TV. Keep your eyes open, folks.